Around the NFL Podcast. Paul Rudd knows one of our names.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL broadcast presented by the United States Marine Corps. My name is Dan Hans as I come to you from a virtual room filled with some heroes, Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
This is the one time of the week I really feel alive, so it's good to share it with you. I've just been like a husk, a corpse since we last spoke.
We kind of like pull you out of some sort of storage chamber on Friday mornings to do this together. That's an enjoyable factor.
And it should be noted, just to provide clarity, the name that Paul Rudd knows is the old Zeuser himself, Dan Hansis. Big fan of my work, and you know, that's just for the audience. Don't want people to be out in the cold when it comes to the money drop.
It's a Dan Hansis shout-out.
No, we're 8 seconds into the show and already have a third-person reference, so we are on brand and firing with power today.
Welcome. Yes, this is the Week 13 preview. I can't believe we made it here. I legitimately can't believe that we've gotten this far, and it's a celebration to be had. And it feels like Week 12 just ended. Hey, Week 12 did just end. So we are in a very strange world of the NFL, something that we'll probably never experience again. So I guess we just ride with the madness, right, Greg?
No, I'm hoping to do this every year. Pandemics just in different flavors kind of pop up each and every season now.
You did. This was something that you had asked for. It's funny what the pandemic did, because Mark had asked for something that would whisk him away from the office for a long stretch and allow him not to see people again, and he got it. And I would say he's thriving, even though he's pretending that it's not something that he likes now that it's actually happened. Whereas, Greg, you many years said you want football every day, and we're almost there now. Is this what you really wanted? Is it everything you could have wished?
Well, you've brought this up a few times. I did back off that stance about 2 years ago. I think it was the second child. That was where I decided, we have enough days of football. I'm not into this.
And by the way, my stance was not that I wanted like the entire globe to be gripped by a pandemic. I said I wanted a soft hospital stay that would, you know, no real permanent damage, but a 3 or 4 month sojourn in a really nice bed with a window to look out that would generate sympathy. People saying that guy worked so hard. There's a lot of concern around him, and when he comes back, he'll be hailed as a hero. This is not how this is unfolding, Dan. So both narratives incorrect.
It would be kind of cool if we finally get back to the office and they just throw you a parade for your return to the office. That would be very confusing.
That would be appropriate.
People, I feel like.
Well, I feel like that's been a long time coming, but you know, that's a whole different issue.
All right. Here we go. Let's get enough of the funny business, okay? Because we got a lot of games to get to. In fact, we have 15 games to get to. Just two teams on bye. My notes say the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Carolina Panthers. Pretty late for a bye. What's the point? Let's move that up in the future. 345 Park Avenue. And we're now going to go through each of the Week 13 games draft style to determine what games we cover come Sunday. And it just so happens that with the first overall pick in the 2020 Week 13 draft, Mark Sessler has the podium.
Well, I have to go here. I'm going to go Cleveland at Tennessee. When's the last time the Browns were 8-3 facing another 8-3 team? This is an interesting matchup. I watched what the Titans did to the Colts last week, and it leaves me very concerned about Cleveland's defense. The back half of their defense is missing Denzel Ward. It's missing safety Ronnie Harrison, and that feels like an inviting mixture for Derrick Henry to go crazy. The counter is you've got Nick Chubb. You've got Kareem Hunt. Nick Chubb is playing as well as any running back right next along with Derrick Henry in the league. So this is a classic old-school rough-and-tumble matchup between two teams that want to run the ball. I want to trust the Browns in this, but I'm a little concerned, guys. The Titans just last week looked so powerful. Am I being a little too pessimistic to think that Tennessee is simply going to walk away in this one potentially?
No, I think that's the conventional wisdom. I mean, I was thinking of locking up against your Browns this week because the Titans are coming off their best 5 quarters of the season. You know, the Titans haven't been that great either. I know the Browns are getting a lot of grief about being 8-3 and not a strong 8-3. And Titans have better wins for sure. But until the last 2 weeks, they've been a poor defense, and they've won a lot of close games, sometimes against mediocre teams, and they haven't been amazing either. I don't think you're too pessimistic, Mark, but I also don't want to lock up against your Browns, because I just look at you, and you know, you've been through a lot. You've got such a nice, you know, sweet face. I want to be rooting for these Brownies on Sunday. Wait, so what? I'm not going to. Look at that guy. You want to root against that guy? I don't want to root against him. How about Baker Mayfield show up and play his best game of the year and keep them going in a shootout?
I'm with you, Greg. Mark, you know, you look at Mark. He's a sweet man. He's a sensitive man. He's got the heart of a poet. So when I'm staring at the games and trying to figure out what to lock up, I also don't want to get on Mark's bad side, because as sweet and as a poet like as he is,
there's another
side. I don't
want to
get on Mark's wrong side also. So it's like, I didn't want to go down that road. It was just far too volatile. So he intimidated me out of it. The intimidating poet is what I call Mark Sessler. But the research notes that NFL media puts together, which are always awesome. Great factoid here. The Browns' negative 21 point differential is the worst by any 8-3 or better team in their first 11 games in NFL history. Now, do I think that that means that the Browns are going to go in the tank? No, because there's some weird stuff around this Browns season, including a trio of weather games that deflated their offense. But at the same time, at some point, you think Baker Mayfield's going to have to win one of these games. Is he up to the challenge? Mayfield is a guy that I still have questions about. At some point, he's going to be called upon, and it's going to be a non-Bengals team. Will he deliver?
I mean, you watch even just the Jaguars game, because it's every game for Baker Mayfield. He had some puzzling throws in the end zone that leave you just seeing, is he seeing the field? He also had a couple tight window throws. That's sort of Baker Mayfield every week. I mean, he hasn't thrown an interception in a month, but they haven't really asked him to do as much. I mean, this is a team that runs through the ground. I think it's a big factor that you have Myles Garrett back. I mean, he had missed the last two games. They worked around that. They need him to come in and make a game-changing play. In most of their victories, many of them have been triggered by a Myles Garrett strip sack, turnover of some nature, or a huge takedown in a money scenario. So Ryan Tannehill will have to deal with that, but this is the best game of the week in my book.
Well, also, there's some major issues with protection for the Titans. Tannehill's getting hit a lot this year, and they have injury issues. You have obviously Taylor Luan out for the year, Ty Zambrano, who is his replacement. He's hurt. Interior, they've been banged up. So if Myles Garrett, he's pretty much unstoppable when healthy, that's a major factor in this game. Another major factor, I think it's a little bit under the radar. We had the great Mike Keith, the voice of the Titans, on the Power Ranking show this week, and he pointed out that, and he's right, that Derrick Henry is not that far off from a 2,000-yard pace. He's on pace for almost 1,900 yards rushing this year. And Nick Chubb, I think, is a top three running back in the league. I think Derrick Henry, in terms of his ability, especially this time of the year, it's Derrick Henry season. And I think he's just going to continue to roll over teams, even if the team is good on the front as the Browns can be.
Yeah, I think this is a game where the 2018 Baker's got to show up. And I thought last week against the Jaguars, he made more impressive throws in that game than maybe any game all season. I know it was against the Jaguars, but they were difficult throws. And that's what you're going to need for them to kind of take the next step. Because in my mind, and I look at the Pro Football Focus rankings, for instance, and it mirrors a little bit how I see Baker. I thought he was a top 10 quarterback his rookie season. I thought the last two seasons that he has been about 20th to 25th. And they're 8-3 despite that. Like, and so if he can make big throws against a pretty bad defense, they should be able to keep up in a shootout. I mean, this Titans defense hasn't shown me much all season.
I do think Kevin Stefanski is an X factor compared to last year when they were blown out by the Titans. A totally different situation. He's a pretty good game day coach, and I would expect a couple trick plays on both sides here. When I think about this game, it's AJ Brown over and over. I just feel like this guy is like a man amongst small children sometimes, and Cleveland secondary has played like small children at various junctures. So there is some slight concern, gentlemen.
AJ Brown a little bit beat up as well heading into this game. Pick the game, Mark, before we move on.
I really want Cleveland to show up here, but I think it's going to be about 28-25 Tennessee Titans.
Okay.
Oh, okay. All right. That's fair. Picking with his head, not his heart.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on in the draft now. Greg, you're up next.
All right, with the second pick, I'm going to surprise you and take a little Patriots Chargers in the late window. I don't think I've watched the Patriots live other than in prime time since week one. It's time. The Patriots made me feel something.
Wait a second,
Greg.
You could have traded back, got this game, and picked up more assets on your chessboard.
It's unbelievable.
I don't really care about all that when it comes to the draft. You just take whatever you want. That's the beautiful thing. I want to watch this game. I want to watch Herbert versus Belichick. I think Belichick, with his plan against Kyler Murray, was about as good as they've been coaching all season. I want to see what he does against Herbert, who now, two out of the last 3 weeks, has gotten scrambled a little bit by the opposing game plan and by his own game plan, and that kind of points to the coaching mismatch in this game. Not only are they relying on the run a little too much and they're blowing clock management in Los Angeles, but I just don't think they're taking advantage of all the talent that they have. Whereas Belichick, I thought last week, it made me want this team, the Patriots, that is, to get through this game, get a win, and at least get to Thursday night against the Rams, where the Patriots will be a big underdog, but that they can get to a meaningful game in week 14. That will be more than I would have expected out of this season.
Well, I thought that, Greg, on Sunday night's flagship show, because we're all fans of Anthony Lynn, but I think maybe you're a bigger fan because you could barely summon the courage to bring up his clock issues at the end of that game. And then
I've been talking about it for 3 years.
and then we all watched the game the next day, and it was stunning. It was stunning what Anthony Lynn did at the end of that game. And, you know, we have talked about it on the show the last few weeks about, you know, whose jobs are secure at head coach, whose are not. And I just think, like, when it comes down to it, when the Los Angeles Chargers brain trust has to decide who the head coach should be with this rookie that hit the ground running as a top 10 quarterback after seeing how this year has played out. I mean, it's just, to me, it's tough because Lynn is a good guy, but there's a lot of good guys that aren't good head coaches, and I think he qualifies. I don't see how he could keep the faith of management short of a great run to close this season. I think he is in a lot of trouble, and I think management will remember this game. Although you're right, he has been having these issues for years. Anthony Lynn's been there for years. He's gotten a long leash to figure this out.
I'm with you, Dan. I mean, like, here's the thing. Once you have this prized first-year quarterback in your house, I mean, you have to go find the best possible solution for him. I've liked the offense with him in there and how they've organized it, but the time management stuff, it sneaks up. It's a weekly thing. It's the last-second losses. It's sort of the Chargers' aura of, look at us and wait to see what we'll do in the fourth quarter. We're going to surprise you, not in a way that's going to delight you if you live in California. I also, flip side, think that Belichick loves the concept of, like, the challenge of going up against Kyler Murray last week, Justin Herbert this week. He loves going on with his against rookie quarterbacks here against Justin Herbert. And I think you're going to get a Patriots team the same way they did last week. You're going to want to run the ball a ton to keep Joey Bosa out of the mix. This is a big couple of weeks for Cam Newton and Cam Newton's future. I don't think he looked good at all last week until that final drive where he used his legs to save them against the Cardinals. A very fascinating matchup. Greg, I don't hate it at number two. I do agree with Dan, though. It's a slight reach.
It's not a reach at all. Basically, you got to pick an afternoon game. That's the one I want to watch in the afternoon. We should point out, Lynn's been there 3 years. One of them, he was almost coach of the year. So it's been an up and down ride, but you got to be able to fix your mistakes, and they haven't been able to do that. And one of their problems this year has been stopping the run. And Cam Newton has been struggling. Like, it's amazing the Patriots are winning this much without a passing game. And so he's also playing for his future, whether it's in New England or somewhere else. Like, he is playing to try to be a starting quarterback, but they are 3-1 in their last four. If they could somehow win this game, they've won 4 out of 5 games. Belichick teams, especially defensively, tend to improve late in the season. Stephon Gilmore is playing well once again, and you never know. I will say their defense has looked quite a bit better the last 3 or 4 weeks, and they're back in the mix, Dan. How about that?
I would say I'd be surprised if they're not playing relevant football in week 16, because I think they're going to hang around because the coaching is so good, and that typically, you know, teams fall back to the pack, you know, in December, and the idea that, oh, everyone's going to be 10-6 that makes the playoffs, it doesn't always end up playing out that way. Newton's obviously got to be better, and Joey Bosa put on an absolute clinic last week. And that's another thing. I mean, you have Justin Herbert, who's having an all-time rookie season. You're wasting performances like what Joey Bosa gave you last week, where he just destroyed the opponent in every way imaginable. The Chargers have too much talent to have a record this bad, and also for me to think that a Patriots team with this lack of talent, this dearth of playmaking ability, is going to go to LA and win, which is what I think is going to happen. So things need to be corrected.
Is he locking it up? Is he locking up the Chargers?
I can't lock up.
Oh, come on.
We've passed the point where Cam Newton could ever be locked up. He's not a lockable quarterback at this
I thought you were going to lock up the Chargers. I thought you were going to just go.
I'm staying away from this game. It's a weird game. I'm staying away. Let's move on. I'm up now. The old Zeuser. And yes, I am thrilled to have this at number three overall. Rams at Cardinals. Didn't think it would get here, and here we are. Good. This is a great quarterback game. Now, they're all quarterback games on some level, but this one especially. You have, obviously, Sean McVay, after a disappointing loss for Los Angeles last week, where they turned the ball over and Jared Goff was sloppy with the ball, and McVay made the pointed comment to say, my quarterback needs to be better with the football. He's got to protect the football. That was pointed criticism. And Goff has to hear that message. He's the big money quarterback. I'm not sure they do that deal again that they did a year ago in September with a massive extension, but they're locked in with Jared Goff now. This marriage is something that's going to continue whether things go poorly or well for the balance of the season. But I want to see how Goff handles that criticism from his coach. On the other side, I don't know what to think about the Cardinals right now, because Kyler Murray, in a lot of ways, is that team. And if he's not going to be the dual threat guy, I don't think they're a dangerous team at all. In fact, I think they're a very flat team. And Mark, I'm not convinced he's even healthy. I know we're not hearing about the shoulder anymore, but that doesn't mean the shoulder's not an issue.
I would say that it's encouraging to watch what he did on the ground in the second half, especially the fourth quarter against the Patriots. Negative 2 yards at halftime, I was thinking the same thing as you. It must be the shoulder. He ran pretty well down the stretch. They're 1-8-1 when he runs for under 30 yards. To your point about the dual threat, you need Kyler Murray on the ground. I mean, we all see that every game. And they've dropped 3 of their last 4. This team is under significant pressure. But I think they're facing a team in the Rams that are under pressure, too, because it feels like every 3 weeks or so, a defense rolls in with a good plan that completely unsettles, neutralizes Jared Goff, and causes mistakes, to the ire of Sean McVay. They've got to find a way for that not to be the case. I know that we always, the Rams are the Rams, and they have a lot of talent. I trust them to get into the playoffs, but do I trust them to go on a Super Bowl run when you're watching a team like the Niners take them out twice? I mean, the Niners' defense last week made the Rams' offense look completely mystified, and especially Jared Goff, and that leads to turnovers and that leads to losses. That's not a formula to go to the Super Bowl.
On paper, the Cardinals have a defense that's really overachieved and can do some of the things that give Jared Goff problems. Vance Joseph's, I think, has done a terrific job. If you look how untalented they are, especially after losing Chandler Jones up front, they've been really injured. They have a lot of new pieces, a lot of leftover parts from other teams. He has them playing cohesively, and he has them blitzing like crazy, but most of their success has been against bad teams and bad coaches. And I think this is a good matchup for him. They beat the Cardinals 2 times last year, fairly convincing one of those times. And I don't think Murray's shoulder's the problem. I think it's just defenses are making him hand the ball off. I mean, he had 3 throws last week that there's no chance it's bothering his arm strength. That he made throws that almost no one in the NFL could make last week. His legs are obviously fine. Maybe he's being hesitant to run, but he keeps saying that defenses are forcing me to hand off on the option plays where it's he either keeps it or hands it off. They're just playing Kyler Murray because they're not that worried about the rest of the Cardinals running backs, and neither would I be. I mean, I would just want to stop Kyler Murray on the ground because the passing game hasn't been that consistent.
I would say Aaron Donald is not going to let him hand off. He's going to want him to hand off the ball. And like Aaron Donald's like 3 times the size of Kyler Murray. Just going to scoop him up.
Well, when you factor in the size of Kyler Murray's helmet, they're about equal in size.
That's fair.
You got to talk about the equipment as well. Yeah, that would be my guess, because I didn't see Kyler throwing ducks out there. It wasn't Chad Pennington after his 14th shoulder surgery or anything. But you wonder if maybe there is a little bit more hesitancy for the Cliff Kingsbury to make those calls or for Kyler to make those decisions. We'll see. It's all going to play out down the stretch here, but they need him. The Seahawks, the Rams are interesting to me because they're almost like the reverse of what's going on in Seattle, the other team that they're battling for division supremacy, where Seattle just needs their defense to get to average. And then it's like you let Russ cook, you let the offense take it home. Weirdly, the Sean McVay team just needs the offense to get to average or a little bit better and then have the defense be what the defense is. And they weren't last week, and you see what happens when they're not. I like the Rams, though, this week, boys. And, you know, for entertainment value, I picked the Cowboys last week in the Locks Challenge. What a bad move that was. And I got burned on it. So I'm back to being deadly serious in this Locks competition. And for that reason alone, for the fact that the Cardinals seem flat, the fact that Kyler Murray doesn't have the juice right now, I'm locking up the Rams to take care of business, knock the Cardinals out of the division race and maybe even the playoffs. And away we go.
I like to build a bridge between us, Dan, when I can.
It's a little boring that we...
Oh, well, you're locking them up too, Greggy.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, what do you mean I picked the Cowboys for entertainment value? The Rams are like the exact same amount of being a favorite as the Cowboys were last week. Not much. It's like close to a coin flip. But you get
teams.
It would be very wise of me.
For starters.
Right, but this Cardinals team has won one game in 5 weeks. One game in 5 weeks, this Cardinals team. I love Jalen Ramsey to shut down DeAndre Hopkins. They're not the same team when that happens, like Gilmore shut him down last week.
Just remember,
you're the Lock Boys. Enjoy it.
Just remember, viewers and listeners, I lucked up the Cowboys for you for entertainment. But now it's serious.
They were favored. They were favored at home. Let's not act like that was an act of courage.
All right. Enough funny business. Snakes to the zoo, sir. Oh, I'm feeling good about this pick. Saints at Falcons, and I can't believe it. I thought Greg would take this with the second overall pick, and if he didn't take that, he'd take the Rams-Cardinals. I didn't think I'd ever get the NFC South showdown between the Saints and Falcons, your favorite rivalry in football, and yet here we are, Mr. Rosenthal. And here's a crazy stat that I think goes under the radar a little bit, and I think it's time to credit Sean Payton a little bit more. The Saints have won at least six straight games in each of the last four seasons. Like, that's incredible. That is a great run of just every year in and year out being a big-time team. And I believe, what are they on, an eight-game winning streak right now? And now they get the Falcons, who obviously are frisky as heck right now. We saw what they did. They embarrassed the Raiders last week. And they got beat by the Saints a few weeks back. And now they get a rematch. And to me, two things to look for here. Number one, on the Falcons side, Julio Jones. He's practicing at the time of this taping. He's got the hamstring issue. When you look at the numbers, it's obvious that Matt Ryan, without Julio Jones, this offense is mediocre at best. With Julio Jones, it is a very good offense. So if Julio plays, that's a big challenge for the Saints. If he doesn't, this feels lopsided. Then again, the other point here, Mark, is Taysom Hill, start three. Obviously, the game plan went totally out the window on some level because they played the Broncos without a quarterback last week. But at the same time, Taysom Hill didn't look like a quarterback, even though that was his position. We get to see how he looks against an opponent that's playing well, the youngry Falcons.
Yeah, I mean, it's Taysom Hill might be playing himself out of a future starting job. I think it's, you know, the Saints and Sean Payton is excellent with backup quarterbacks over the past 2 years, undefeated with them. So there's that. It's the Saints defense, though. They have allowed one touchdown in the past four games. I mean, their pressure rate has doubled over the past four games. But this Falcons defense with Raheem Morris at head coach have gone from 18th, and Greg loves the DVOAs, from 18th to 3rd in defensive DVOA. So I think this, you know, this is an interesting matchup. I have extreme confidence in what I'm about to do, though, right here. And I've gone and checked with the little men in the desert, and this checks out heartily with no concern. I'm going to be locking up the New Orleans Saints, and you can say whatever you want about it, boys.
I think that's great. I think they're kind of at the level of the Chiefs right now that any time you get a chance to lock them, you should. But they're not favored by much because they don't have a quarterback. I mean, this game is expected to be as close or closer than Rams-Cardinals. I don't think that's giving the Saints enough credit because of the matchup here. I didn't draft this game because it was such a dud last time around. The Saints' defensive line was so dominant against the Falcons' offensive line. Cameron Jordan has the all-time record record of sacks against a quarterback because he just is in Matty Ice's face every single snap. But it's not just Cameron Jordan. It's Trey Hendrickson. It's Rankins when he's healthy. It's everybody. It's Marcus Davenport if he plays this week. It's David Onyemata getting pressure. They've had no chance. They sacked him like crazy when they played on Thanksgiving a year ago. Weird things happen when teams play twice in 3 weeks, and weird things happen when these two teams play. So it wouldn't totally shock me if a frisky Falcons team makes this close. But the Saints are the best team in the league right now. I really believe that. They don't have a passing game, so I don't trust them like the Chiefs without their quarterback back. But other than that, they're the best team in the league.
They are, according to Next Gen Stats, they're running the ball nearly 70% of the time right now. And Greg, I think there was some validity to it. You called out my comments about Alvin Kamara essentially being erased from this offense, and the fact that he's also my number 9 overall pick in my league of record in fantasy.
Nice.
Yeah,
pick.
Of course.
Nice pick.
I'm a real person, so that's going to shade, I guess, some of my analysis. Throw me in jail. But at the same time, isn't it a little bit weird? A little bit weird that Alvin Kamara is your best player on the team, and now you have an offense where you're not really using him anymore.
But it's 2 weeks, and they won games by so much that I don't think it's meaningful yet.
He's been targeted on 13% of his routes with Hill. It was at 37 with Breeze. Maybe it's small sample size. So let's see. Let's see what happens here. But I think Alvin Kamara needs to be a big part of this. Now, there's another part of this, too. Alvin Kamara has a foot issue. Maybe they're protecting him right now. So there's too much to really draw conclusions on. But at the same time, like, this offense needs to, I think, feature Alvin Kamara, because this Taysom Hill thing, it just seems... I don't know. It seems fugazi to me.
I would say this. I think Sean Payton cares very much about fantasy football and your fantasy team, Dan. So I think you're going to see an uptick in Alvin Kamara usage. It's everyone. People are going nuts. Yeah,
I gotta say though, millions and millions of Alvin Kamara fantasy owners are like, what is happening right now? This is absurd.
And you're representing them well. It's too bad Mark's not watching this game, because. This feels like a lot of pressure. Living on Taysom Hill, playing this Falcons team. It's just a recipe. You know, you got Young Wei Koo leading his fantasy teams to glory every week. You got Keanu Neal. You got Aluakon on the Falcons defense. You never know. It's Mark putting himself on the line, putting his heart on the line with Taysom Hill in a big spot as a lock.
I largely feel nothing inside at this point in the season. So, like, let's, you know, I'll be
please,
okay. I think there's some
please.
Slight projecting going on there.
Time now for Road to Victory, presented by the United States Marine Corps. Big game here. I like this game. Kind of a sneaky good game. Bills, Niners. Mark, a Bills team, 8-3, feeling good. Beat a Chargers team in not the most impressive way. But listen, they're really set up well to win their division. And then on the other side, the Niners, who, man, we like the Niners around these parts, especially this team.
Yeah, I don't think it's sneaky good. We've had enough of the Bears and the Eagles at nighttime. Let's get some real games here. This is intriguing. The football gods, they riddled the Niners with injuries. Corona did its thing. And instead, now they're getting healthy. I mean, watching Deebo Samuel back in the lineup last week and what that did for their offense against the Rams, he was all over the place. Now you got Brandon Ayuk back. Raheem Mostert is back. I'm looking at this and saying, this is the team that could supersede the Arizona Cardinals and jump into the playoffs. It's not crazy. Nick Mullins would be the X factor there, because he seems to do two things a game that totally shatter your chances of winning. But they found a way, especially with this defense is so well coached. It's so well coached, and they're so active. And what they did against Jared Goff gave me so much faith. I think this is an incredible matchup, Greg.
They are so well coached. It's really amazing, because they have gotten healthier on the back end. You have Richard Sherman. Their linebackers are healthy now, and that's great. But their defensive line are mostly guys that they had no interest in playing to start the year. Kerry Hyder has numbers that you would have expected out of Nick Bosa. Kerry Hyder has been on 4 or 5 teams. He's a good player, always underrated, but they are so cohesive, and that could be a problem for Josh Allen, who I keep banging the drum, makes a few decisions every game that makes you worried. They're not going to have John Brown in this game. They ran the ball better, and I think that's the way to beat the Rams. I mean, the 49ers, rather, ultimately. And so that's big for Buffalo. If they can have some balance, I don't think they necessarily want to be throwing the ball 40 times a game with Josh Allen moving late into December. As explosive as they are, it's almost better to be balanced, to have a changeup. And ultimately, I do think they have more talent than the San Francisco team.
Yeah, I'm with you on that point you've been making about Allen, because it seems like clockwork, there's going to be one throw that's put up for grabs and one time he puts it on the carpet in the pocket. And it's like, can you take advantage of those opportunities? The Chargers last week didn't. I think they had three turnovers in the span of about seven plays in the fourth quarter against the Chargers, but the Chargers are such a mess that they don't know how to accept gifts from other people. So, well, the Niners, I feel like they're a better team, a better coach team, and I think they would take advantage of that. The other thing with San Francisco, yes, Nick Mullins is a grab bag. Sometimes he'll look like the worst quarterback in the league. Other times he'll look totally competent. Brandon Ayuk's going to be back here, and he's obviously a big-time playmaker. And then Deebo Samuel is one of my favorite players to watch in the league, because he's just one of those dudes where when the ball's in his hand – I almost said, by the way, one of those cats. But I don't like when people say cats. I don't know. I feel like it's a way – it's an affectation to seem cat? Cool. One of those cats. You put the ball in his hand, and he just looks different. I mean, he's just a special cat. No, I'm calling him a dude. And I feel
slightly
better
antiquated
that. I feel
cats.
Anyway, so when he has the ball in his hands, he looks different. He's built different. He's thick, but he's fast, and he runs through tackles. And because Kyle Shanahan's a genius at this thing, he finds the way to get the ball in his hands. So as long as Nick Mullins doesn't implode, I really like the Niners in this game. I think the Niners are going to be around in December. Mark, I think we prematurely forked them on Thursday night a few weeks ago.
I wasn't a part of that, Niners fans. They're coming at me sometimes. I was like, look, I wasn't on that podcast. I wouldn't have forked Kyle Shanahan.
Actually,
well,
Mark,
Greg, you
Greg
deserve, you deserve that. But, Dan, that was premature on our part. That means we have to give money to a certain charity of our picking. Charity is a wide term.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll see.
So I think the Niners win this game. How about that? Outright. Anybody with me?
I took the Bills by a point in this game. But I do think that this is the first game with Ayuk, Mostert, and Deebo since week six. And it's a big test for the Bills defense, who I thought played their best game of the season. That's why I'm taking the Bills. I think their defense might be rounding into form, and that gives them a few more routes to win.
I think this is the beginning of San Francisco's playoff run. I would say, like, yummy, yummy, put this game in my tummy. I'm all about the Niners at night. I'm tired of bad primetime matchups.
How old are you?
I love the San Francisco 49ers. They're going to win this game going away.
Lock it up, then. You can always change your lock.
Yeah, you can move off the team on the 8-game winning streak for, this game if you want.
You know what? The narratives, whenever I pick a lock, the narratives are absurd. And the deep studies show that my locks are absolutely legit. I'm going to stick with my lock.
All right. There you go. That was Road to Victory presented by the United States Marine Corps. All right. Next game. Let's knock out the other off-schedule game. This is not the Monday Night Football branded game. So do not dare connect that to the celebrated ESPN ABC Disney property. Okay, this is Washington football team at Pittsburgh Steelers, 4-7, 11-0. But guess what? These are two teams battling for a division title. The Steelers obviously in great position right now, Mark Sessler, and have a chance to make history. But we're coming off a game against the Ravens on Wednesday that was by no means a piece of art by the Steelers, especially on offense. Do you give them any pass for the way things played out on Wednesday?
I kind of do. I mean, so much happened in the lead up to that. I'm not good at a lot of things on Wednesday, so I understand how that goes.
Hump day.
I think this, though, a couple weeks ago you would have said Pittsburgh walks away with this thing. I'm watching Washington kind of grow into a bit of a dangerous operation here. And Greg, we covered that Thanksgiving bout with Dallas where the Cowboys were embarrassed, I thought, by young Turner, Scott Turner, coming up with a lot of trick
young
plays.
Key.
Our guy, I mean, Logan
Scotty
Thomas.
Too-hottie.
He's a property on the rise. I love watching Logan Thomas of late. He's got wildcat carries. He had a 28-yard pass to Terry McLaurin. I mean, he's doing all sorts of stuff, and they're coming up with creative ways to get people open. I think Antonio Gibson is becoming one of the more intriguing backs in the league. So this is a challenge for Pittsburgh. You know, in a in another weird setup to a game, because these teams like to do the same thing every week, and it's like now you practice from Wednesday to Monday. That's odd. So I think, you know, the Steelers, they can clinch a playoff berth with a win here, so they're going to be focused. I would expect a better showing.
I think this is going to be a big potential problem for Pittsburgh. I look at the matchup and the way their offensive line is struggling. They had one of the worst days of the season on Wednesday. They not only lost Bud Dupree, their great pass rusher for the season, they lost their center, Pouncey, to the COVID list. He's probably not going to be back for this game. They're coming off a short rest. The Washington football team, who's the most fun Washington team I've watched since Clinton Portis and Jim Zorn and Jason Campbell were running around, gets better in every week, and they have some rest. I think you're feeling the weight of the season if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers. Not just the weight of coronavirus that we're all feeling, and their team has also been hurt by Stephon Tuitt is out, but the injuries and the undefeated record. You know, they were so miserable after that win, after beating the Ravens, saying it wasn't good enough and it was JV and they're not happy. It's like you see this every time there's an undefeated team in December. It's just like it's heavy, it's miserable, and meanwhile you got a Washington team with Alex Smith. Give it to me. Give me the upset. I'm picking Washington to win this game on my game picks. Check that out, NFL.com/game picks. I need some joy in 2020. How about Alex Smith doing a post-game interview at like 5 p.m. Pacific on a Monday afternoon after he takes out the last undefeated team in the league? That's what I want. Give it to me.
Well, there's no such thing. There's honestly no such thing as a joyful Zoom call. Even, I mean, it doesn't matter
well,
who's
how about
involved
the,
or what the circumstances
the post-game.
Are.
It'll be the post-game on whatever network this is even on.
Your bar
I can't
is
keep
low,
track
very
anymore.
Low.
All you need to know is it is not ESPN and it is not their property. All right, no. Here's the counter to that. The Pouncey thing's a big deal. And yes, Ben was under pressure on Wednesday. I think he threw the ball 51 times, which is crazy. And he wasn't sacked once. And it's all because this new Ben Roethlisberger, where according to Next Gen Stats, fastest in the league time to throw in terms of seconds, highest in the league quick pass percentage, third highest yards under passes under 10 yards. So he gets the ball out. So it's going to negate the real, to me, strength of the Washington defense more than anything else, which is their front seven and the ability of that front seven to wreak havoc on the quarterback and the pass rush. So while I really do admire the onions, Greg, of you picking the Washington football team, I don't want to sell the undefeated Steelers short here. I think it could just as easily go the other way, and this game gets away from Washington and the Steelers romp. I could see that as an outcome as well. Is that something that you can't see as an outcome?
It's possible, but I like fun. I mean, I guess you don't. You just like boring old undefeated teams marching forward. I like Alex Smith.
Says the Patriots fan.
I like Antonio Gibson. I like Terry McLaurin. I mean, you're just like, oh, the boring old Steelers.
I mean,
you know,
Greg, lock it up if you're feeling so.
Yankees. No, I'm not locking this up, please.
Oh, well, you put something on NFL. I put a lot of things on NFL.com that no one will ever have any concept that happens.
Exactly.
So let's see how that works.
All right, let's move on. Greg, continuing the draft, you're up next.
All right, I got the Colts. And the Texans, this is how I expected the draft to go. I really plotted it out. I said they're going to leave this one for me. I like that in the morning. I get to watch a little Deshaun Watson. I get to watch my Colts against a compromised Texans team. Let's be real. Not just without Will Fuller, but Bradley Roby was playing good at cornerback. So those two suspensions, I think, really hurts them. And I think their weakness on defense stopping the run in Houston really helps out Indianapolis. They are a totally different team, the Colts, when they can run the ball. Jonathan Taylor's off the COVID-19 list. It just sets up everything for Phillip Rivers, who missed practice this week. A teammate said he's really struggling with this foot/toe injury. That's a problem moving forward. I don't think it's going to be a big enough problem against a beleaguered Texans team right now. Even though they're winning games, I'm not giving them too much credit.
One thought, is it possible that Phil Rivers has reached a stage in terms of lack of mobility and slowness that any injuries to his lower body won't make a difference because he's already at the lowest level of speed status?
I mean, classic Stone Age pony right there. That's the dictionary definition of when we use that term. Dan, there's
something
to that.
I'm not even joking, really. It's like, how much slower is he going to get?
Well, because you've got to be able to pivot and plant when you throw the ball. If he's missing practice, that's a problem. He's not a guy who wants to be missing practice.
It is. I mean, it helps. I mean, getting DeForest Buckner back, getting DeNico Autry back off the COVID list. Look, that is a huge reason that they were destroyed last week by Derrick Henry. It's not the only reason, but it's a factor because this defensive line has been stout. It's been the heart of their team. And you get healthy, you're good. I think the Colts basically are under some pressure here. You can't let the Texans clip you here. I know that they're down, but they're still frisky. And the Colts, to me, sometimes they seem to just go a little stagnant. I don't really trust them on offense at all. I do trust their defense if they're healthy. And you got to take care of business and stay in this AFC wildcard picture here and not fade away.
I almost give the Colts a pass for last week. I think DeForest Buckner is the Jenga piece of the entire team, let alone the defense. And the stats back it up. I mean, when he's not on the field, and he's usually been on the field this season, they average 2 yards more per carry on the ground, their opponent does. And that comes despite the fact that when Buckner's out of the game, and this is all coming from Next Gen Stats, Indy stacks the box at roughly double the rate to try to. So they're trying to make up for the fact that Buckner's gone, but he's such an important player that it doesn't matter with the run, and then that leaves them exposed in the passing game when they're stacking the box. So Buckner being out of there was a killer for them. So him being back and off the COVID list, I think they'll sense the urgency here. Our friend Patrick Claibon, sometimes him and I butt heads about things like momentum and trap games and things like that. I believe in urgency as well, and teams knowing they need to win a game, although Patrick might counter, well, they always want to win the game.
He's in your head. He's not even really on the show and he's in your head.
They really, really, really need to win this game, and they will, and I would lock it up if I didn't feel so good about my other lock.
Hmm. I like that. And I, you know, one positive with the Phillip Rivers injury is the Jacoby Brissett short yardage package, which is one of my favorite, most ridiculous, delightful parts of this entire season, where you replace the 32nd slowest quarterback in the league with like the 29th. And it's like working. I love Jacoby Brissett, like I've always rooted for, but it's really funny that you're bringing in one, like a guy who's got about the mobility of Jared Goff to run the short yardage plays. It's just, it's fun.
Dan, Greg is a weird guy.
He is a weird guy. He's a strange guy. And Greg, don't be so cynical. Yes, Patrick Claibon's in my head, but in a good way, in the greatest way.
Sure.
Everyone wants Patrick Claibon in their head. All right. Before we move on to the next draft pick, two things, two orders of business. Okay. And I want to start by welcoming in a little surprise, a little early birthday present here from the Around the NFL podcast. His first preview show appearance of 2020, the great Chris Wessling will join us for the back half of the show. What's up, Wes?
Hey now, happy to be here.
Look at that. And I'm glad that Wes is with us for the back end of the show, and we're all happy for obvious reasons. But also, we need to say thank you to all of the listeners that reached out to us, Wes, over the last week. Spotify has their year-end data, and we were just really an avalanche of information was sent our way from all of the listeners who, you know, just listen to the show relentlessly on a level that we could never imagine. And the growth of the show, both here in America and abroad, has been stunning. And Wes, I know you were getting a ton of that as well. That was pretty cool this week.
What's that, Lear? From an 80s song called A Deluge in a Paper Cup? That's what it felt like halfway through the week. There's a deluge of Spotify content coming through. It was nice to see, and thankful to everyone who spent 8,000 minutes with us.
I hope, Wes, you know, I know you're not feeling 100%, but as the great Jon Bon Jovi said, good pod is like bad medicine. Bad medicine is
that
all
was the
I
exact
need.
Quote.
Let's do it.
All right. Any more 80s lyrics?
Wes, you actually quoted, that was perhaps on my short list of favorite 80s songs ever, Don't Dream It's Over by Crowded House.
There we go.
That is a beautiful song. Please check it out, youngsters listening to the show right now. And again, thank you to all the listeners who have reached out to us and supported us, not just this year, but since the beginning, way back in July 2013. Wes, this is awesome that you're on the back end of the show. And, you know, we're just going to throw you right in the fire here, buddy. We're going to pump you into the draft, and we're going to reboot this thing. It's like an expansion draft, and you will be picking next. You have the list of games remaining in front of you. Where are you going?
I'm going Eagles at Packers.
All right. And why that, sir?
Because it has the Packers.
So are they, for you, the Packers are appointment television, which is notable because we had gotten to a point, Wes, where they weren't the last couple of years. But things have changed in a very good way for football fans.
Things have changed, and they are shallow at wide receiver and tight end. But when they're all healthy, it's just enough. And I think they click when Alan Lazard is there for them. He's not a big name guy in households around the country, but he really helps Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers trusts him more than he trusts a guy like MVS. I like the way they're rolling. Robert Tonyan's become a go-to receiver for them. And as much as you look at the Chiefs and they've got wide receivers running wide open throughout the game, Aaron Rodgers keeps having to put the ball on the money for these guys, and he keeps doing it over and over again. They are appointment viewing. Aaron Jones still making it happen at running back. This offense right there at the top of the league with the Chiefs.
The offensive line's so good that it does make you a little concerned. Corey Linsley's out for 3 to 6 weeks, you know, one of the best centers in the entire league. They've been kind of the key to me. I mean, the holes they're opening up in the passing game, the protection they give Rodgers, it almost doesn't matter who's there at receiver, but it sounds like they will have Lazard for this game. He left Sunday night, was it? This week is really confusing me, with an injury. So I thought, oh my gosh, they're right back to where they were, but he's been at practice, and you only need so many points when you're playing like the dead ass, Eagles. Can we say that? I guess.
Sure.
I mean, you just did, so I think that's okay. I mean, I always wonder what is happening to someone like Darius Slay, who was massacred on national television, and, you know, Twitter's going wild, and now he's going to deal with Devontae Adams. It feels like he and Carson Wentz would probably just like to vanish and go take, like, a boat trip to a distant island and get away from this season that cannot end fast enough for the Eagles. I also think, like, whenever you've got your head coach answering constant questions about play calling and who's calling the plays and the methodology of calling the plays, it's kind of the indicator that chaos is brimming over. And I do wonder about the future of Doug Peterson.
You look at the schedule. I mean, look where they're at now. So they kicked away their opportunity to right the ship when they lost to the Giants out of their bye. Then they lose to Cleveland. They get beat by Seattle, so they're on a three-game skid. And now you look at the schedule. At Green Bay, that's probably a loss. Home to New Orleans. Taysom Hill and all that is a little interesting with the Saints, but you don't feel good there. And at that point, you're 3-9. And I don't care how bad the NFC East is. I'm pretty sure you're cooked at that point. So the Eagles are not compelling to me anymore, because it used to be a month ago, I was compelled by this Carson Wentz soap opera / tragedy that was unfolding, West. But now he just seems like a broken quarterback, and the team seems like it doesn't know what to do, and the head coach seems like he's out of answers. So there's not a lot of interest to this Eagles team.
When you say broken quarterback, it reminds me of something Trent Dilfer once said about every quarterback needs to be broken like a stallion when they enter the league until they accept coaching. And a guy like Carson Wentz, who over and over again has said, I'm not going to change the style in which I play. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to hold the ball. I'm going to wait for the play to happen. And he does that every game like it's the Super Bowl. And you can't play quarterback that way, just holding the ball. I wonder, the way Doug Peterson's coaching him now, where they don't call much play action to help him out, they really don't call much at all to help him. I wonder if Doug Peterson wants to wait until Carson Wentz hits rock bottom and accepts coaching.
I don't know. I think he knows he's going down with the ship if it continues, and that they're in this together. I think he has played differently the last 3 weeks, in the sense that they seem just determined to prevent turnovers. Like, that's all they care about. They're not even trying to roll him out or do anything creative. Like, that's not working either, because he's not accurate. He's not making good decisions. It's a tough watch. This Packers defense isn't great. They've gotten a little juice maybe up front since they have Rashawn Gary playing more with Za'Darius Smith inside. They've been disappointing too, but every defense looks good against this Eagles team.
All right, let's move on. Mark, you're up next.
Well, I mean, I have to, you know, we at the way these drafts work, you've got to schedule your day out. I've got to grab a 4 p.m.er here. I'm going to go Giants at Seattle. I have no problem watching the Giants, the team I grew up watching. Colt McCoy will be, you know, they have not confirmed this, but we certainly assume Colt McCoy will be starting.
Can I ask you a question, Mark? And we've touched on this before. You named your second son after the Cleveland Browns quarterback at the time, Colt McCoy.
Yes.
Does it cause you to root for Colt McCoy, Or is there enough disconnect where it doesn't even, like, your mind doesn't even process that your son was literally named after this player that's playing on Sunday?
No, of course it would make me root for him. I mean, it's not that far disconnected of an event that it has no meaning to me. I mean, he's also just simply not been on – he's not appeared in our lives for so long that it's kind of interesting to me on its own. I really like Colt McCoy, the person. Colt McCoy, the quarterback, leaves you asking some questions. I thought he missed a couple throws last week that suggested he could use some practice time. You're dealing with Seattle's defense that I thought has gotten a little bit better with Carlos Dunlap and Jamal Adams. But you know, I know you guys mentioned in the speed round of our network show that you thought this would just be a wild blowout. Giants defense has been better. Leonard Williams has been better. They are the fifth in the NFL in QB hits. They've been getting to the quarterback a little bit more. I think they're coached well. I don't think it's going to be a close game, especially with Colt McCoy under center. I think it's sort of a mess Daniel Jones was playing some of his best football. He melts out of the lineup, and the Giants are still alive for the division. The timing is awful. Seattle can't slip up here. I wouldn't expect an upset.
So where do you come down? We call blowout. You said you don't see a blowout, but you see a one-sided game.
I don't think it's going to be like a 40-10 type thing. When I think blowout, I think like melt the stadium down.
I mean,
like
there
44
can be like,
to 10.
I mean, that Eagles Seahawks game almost felt like a if it's 24-10, that can sometimes feel like a blowout. That's kind of what I expect here.
I think the Giants have been frisky. That's all. I mean, yeah. I wish Daniel Jones was playing.
This would be a fun game if Daniel Jones was playing. If he was going to skip 1 week, though, don't put him on this plane across the country with that hamstring. You're probably going to lose this game anyways. Try to get him healthy for next week. He was doing a couple things at practice and move forward because you're still going to be right in there in the NFC East. You'll probably still be in first place after this week in the NFC East.
Let me check in here on the progress of Dunlap because
He's out.
So that's notable. I mean, because he had 4 sacks in 4 games, and it wasn't just the sacks. He was essentially bringing West that pressure that they needed up front. And now you don't know what his status is. Will that lead to their pass rush going back off the rails? Because that's been kind of a surprise. It's been legitimately good in the last few weeks, which is something they desperately needed.
Yeah, they're a funny team that sees themselves as contenders, but were willing to go into the season without a pass rusher. They let Jadeveon Clowney go. They drafted L.J. Collier, who's more to me an inside guy than a pass rusher. So they went into the season without a Carlos Dunlap type. They really need him to complete that defense.
Jamal Adams essentially was their acquisition to have a pass rusher, which is obviously weird and a little quirky as well.
Worked last week, though.
Yes, they have 22 sacks since week 8. How about that? And they sacked Carson Wentz 6 times on Monday night. All right. Up next in the draft, Greg the Hammer Rosenthal.
Oh, boy. These are the sounds that I make when I don't have my pick ready. Let's go Mike Glennon. Let's go Vikings. Let's get this knocked out of the way. Don't need to see this on Game Pass. You know, Mike Glennon, I would argue, might have played the best game by a quarterback, a Jacksonville Jaguars quarterback all season.
It was not bad at all.
It's not over. Wes. Let's bring back the 2013 podcast arguments. I think that was our first season doing a podcast, and Wes was firmly on the Mike Glennon's a bum. He doesn't move this Bucks team. I was on the, Glennon's fun to watch. You know what, Wes? You probably won that one, but now I'm back in the ring at least.
I've known you for how many years now? 15? And it never fails to astound me how poor your memory is.
Yeah.
Your memory is atrocious. Like, after one start in September, you were like, Gardner Minshew's really good. Like, he had an awesome game. And now
I thought about it. I went back and looked.
Now Glennon has a C-plus game, and you're like, oh, yeah, better than any game of Jaguars.
I went back and looked at D-minus game.
I went back and looked at PFF just to, like, see if I thought it was crazy. I would say he was about the same as, like, a good Gardner Minshew game. And for what it's worth, they did have him graded as slightly the highest-rated game by a Jaguars quarterback. So I was it's not a crazy talk.
You're both crazy. You and PFF.
He had like 5 or 6 big time throws in that game. I mean, that's just a fact.
Play circles around Mike Glennon. Give me a break.
I would rather have Minshew.
Isn't it interesting, though? Because we all know who Mike Glennon is at this point. And while he did make some throws, I don't think anybody could say that he was playing at a high level last week.
I mean, he played as well as Baker Mayfield, for sure, well, if not better.
I'm just saying, I guess my point is this. He's Mike Glennon.
For
okay?
1 week. For 1 week, yeah.
And if Gardner Minshew is healthy, I guess who cares ultimately, because Jacksonville's blowing it up at quarterback anyway. But I am surprised that Minshew's not back in the lineup this week.
He's too risky.
That's
they can't afford to win.
Right, they're telling you that they don't want to win, and they're doing it as coyly as possible. No one buys
it. They have a funny way to show it. They've had leads against quality teams now, like almost 3 weeks in a row. I don't buy that at all.
That's why Minshew's too risky, because the Jaguars are frisky. They're actually a decent team that will surprise a lot of people next year. But Minshew's too good. He's going to win games the rest of this year.
I'd say they're lucky to have their terrible record. I mean, if they're aiming to get a first-round pick, they're lucky to not have won 3 or 4 games.
I'm with you, but I also think Jay Gruden liked having Glennon back there, and their offense played well. Like, I don't expect it to continue this week, even against a Vikings defense that's not great rushing the passer, although they've been much better lately. But he played well. The offense made a lot more sense. It made you think, like, if he was in there instead of Luton, you know, they would have had a better chance to win. But your Vikings, the team of Zeus TL, right there, 6-6, staring at them.
Not just a 6-6 staring at them, but a schedule that's favorable down the stretch. Week 15, they get the Bears. Week 17, they get the Lions. You have the Bucks also in there, and who knows how to make sense of the Bucks right now. And then they have a tough one at New Orleans in Week 16. I think 9-7 is not out of the realm of possibility. We'll see if that gets them in. Kirk Cousins, 12 touchdowns and one pick in his last 5 games. He had 10 picks weeks 1 through 7. So that's pretty interesting. And here's why this is going to be a blowout, because you have a quarterback in Cousins playing extremely well right now. Dalvin Cook's a little beat up, but you imagine they'll be able to run the ball either way, because this is the Jaguars' defensive ranks, and this is why they've lost 10 straight. They are allowing 30 points a game. They are allowing 416 yards per game. That's 31st in the league. They are allowing 136 yards on the ground per game. That's 29th in the league. They are allowing 280 yards through the air. That's 29th in the league. And they only have 11 sacks the entire season. So,
and they lost like 4 or 5 of their starters in the last 2 or 3 weeks alone. So it doesn't help.
What a mess. All right. Moving on. Got the old Zeuser. And I need a late game. I really do. Denver,
you might be
Kansas
out of luck
City.
There.
Denver, Kansas City. Oh.
That's Sunday night.
Yeah, that is late, but no,
it's too late. Cincinnati at Miami. Cincinnati at Miami late.
You are out of luck on 4 o'clock.
I'm out of luck.
But
okay.
we can do some shuffling
around
some deal
out.
Making. Yeah.
All right, let's go Raiders at Jets then. Here's my I want to hear Wes's thoughts on this. So this is great. Obviously a disaster for the Raiders in Atlanta, and the thing everything that could go wrong did go wrong, and then the quarterback Carr had such a poor game that I think it had an effect of erasing any positive things that Carr has done this season. So they're almost back to zero in terms of respect amongst the football cognoscente. So what happens now? Are they going to go in the tank like they did last year, which would be good news for the Cleveland Browns, Mark Sessler's favorite team, and other AFC playoff hopefuls? Or are they going to bounce back here against obviously historically terrible Jets team, get their feet back under them, and then finish out this season and get to the 10 wins they need? I'm not ready to bail on the Raiders. It was a bad week. It was a terrible week. It was an embarrassing week. But I'm not willing to say, based on what we've seen this season, that it was a La Rabia Magnifico, that this was actually a bad team all along. I don't think they are. I don't think they're elite. I don't think they're bad. I think they're pretty good, and that's why I think they kill the Jets, and they will be playing for the playoffs in Week 17. Wes, agree or disagree?
If your contention is they are an average football team, I agree.
I believe them to be above average.
Maybe slightly above average. I've seen them all year as a team that has a chance to get a wild card. Sneak in, but I don't see them as like a legitimate threat to anyone who's a contender. I see them as a kind of an also-ran who might sneak into the playoffs and play one game and lose. But I sent you guys that outrageous stat from Mike Sando of The Athletic. There have been about 11,000 offensive games, which means 5,500 games because there's two offenses in each game, since the year 2000, and the Raiders' performance against the Falcons ranked 10,991st.
Oh, my goodness.
That's how bad they were.
It's fluky, though, wasn't
that
it?
It was very fluky. I'm just saying that that stat astounded me. But I don't think they're that bad, no. I think they just had one bad game, and they should have an easy time against the Jets.
I mean, we all are going to have, like, our worst day, our legit worst day of our life. And that might have been theirs. That might have been collectively theirs as a group, to statistically, based on what you're saying.
It was really all the offense, too. It was just, like, yes. The Raiders' offense.
Right. Like, I'm kind of with you, Wes, that I think that there's a group of teams in the AFC that no matter who wins the wild card grouping, like, you're just essentially Kansas City Chiefs fodder. And I don't really buy a number of them to go on.
Yeah, but how can you say that after what they've done in two games?
Because why do I have to be that impressed with the Raiders? Like, I think they're just sort of...
Watch the two games against the Chiefs.
I like what I think they're built to beat the Chiefs.
I just
think specifically built to beat the Chiefs.
Fodder, call them cannon fodder after the performances they put up in those spots.
I guess I just don't trust them to go on. What are you saying, that they're going to go on a playoff run?
No, I didn't go that far. I said that I don't think they're going to. I think there's a lot of. It's easy right now to connect the dots to last year at this time, where they had a similar or same record and then completely folded. And off of performances, historically, as Wes pointed out, awful as against the Falcons, there is a temptation to say, oh, the Raiders are done now. I'm just not there yet.
Not
I think
done.
Part of the reason is the Jets coming up on their schedule allows them to kind of get their feet back under them. I think it's perfect schedule timing for them.
Well, they play the Colts and the Dolphins in their final four games. They should beat the Jets, get to 7-5. So are you saying you like them better than, let's say, the Colts and the Dolphins? Because if you don't like them better than those teams, then they're not going to make the playoffs. But if they win those games, they will go to the playoffs.
And you like them?
Those are pretty
assume,
clear games for them.
I'd assume you like them better than the Browns, Dan.
Yeah, I do like them better than the Browns.
So you have them as the outside of the Titans?
Like the sixth. That's the sixth.
The Bills,
probably.
The Titans, the Chiefs are all teams I think are
all division winners. So they are your number one wild card team, the Raiders.
Maybe. But they obviously have to get off the mat here. That's all I'm saying. I guess my point is I'm not bailing off the USS Gruden right now.
No, that's fine.
Well, maybe you will be when Quinnen Williams wrecks shop. How about Quinnen Williams? More QB
nice
hits
year.
And sacks in the last 2 weeks than Chase Young has all season. People trying to
really?
Get Chase Young a rookie of the year. Give me a break. That's another matter. Chase Young's is a good player, but let's get some production. Quinnen Williams is on absolute fire, which is nice to see for the next Jets coach. I'm telling you, their best three players are all their top picks from the last two drafts, just about. I mean, with Becton, Mims, and Quinnen Williams, that's nice. That's a
you
good
don't
pick.
Have, you don't have to squint to get excited about where the Jets could be next June, say. But first they need to go through the rest of this horrific season.
I'm squinting pretty hard.
Right.
Yeah.
It's still going to take a lot. But I do like that their top drafted players in the last two drafts are showing you a lot.
Right. I guess what I mean by that is, like, look at the Browns after their 0-16. And then they had all the draft picks and they brought in the quarterback. And all of a sudden it was like, okay, there's actually optimism. And you had some of the players in the building. It was like, okay, there's something here to maybe build on. I think getting to that point can happen quickly. Now, whether they actually become a non-embarrassment once the games begin in next September, well, that's another conversation.
Well, if Joe Burrow can do for the Bengals what he did, you know, even energy-wise, that quickly, I think if you get Trevor Lawrence, you've got something, you're cooking, because they have a ton of draft picks. Everyone loves the general manager, and you'd hope he'd make a lot of good decisions in free agency, too. You may not be that far away.
All right, so let's move on. Is Snakes to the Zeuser here?
That's right.
All right. Well, I'm going to... Can I default to Wes? Give Wes another pick here?
I mean, you could take one of the prime times. You could do anything you want.
Go ahead, Wes.
I will go Bengals at Dolphins.
Okay.
Against my better judgment, after seeing Brandon Allen lead an offense. I don't know how they almost beat the Giants last week, because that game was an indictment of Ryan Finley, a guy the Bengals drafted in the middle rounds. Can't even beat out Brandon Allen, who, how did the Bengals score? They got a kickoff return for a touchdown, and then their second touchdown was a phantom defensive passive interference penalty in the end zone, which gave them the ball on the 1-yard line, and they went in. They got the ball back on a punt return at midfield with enough time to come back and win that game, and Brandon Allen gets a strip sacked on his first drop back there. They have no offense. He can't throw beyond 15 to 20 yards with any authority whatsoever. They can't stretch anybody. They can't threaten anybody, and they are horrible to watch.
Mm. The Dolphins are so lucky that after their worst game of the entire season, which was in Denver, not just that they lost, but they were absolutely manhandled right at the point of the season where a young team that's overachieved a little bit, you do wonder, okay, are they going to teeter? Are they going to collapse? Are they going to kind of show us who they are? Then they get the Jets and the Bengals back-to-back weeks, the two worst teams, I think, in the entire NFL now, and they can get right, and they have a very similar defensive scheme to the Giants, who are run by Patrick Graham, the defensive coordinator, who had Brandon Allen just totally mind-melded, I mean, mind-effed. He was done, and the Dolphins' defense will do it again, and they should romp. With Fitzpatrick, most likely. It doesn't sound like Tua's back.
Yeah, Fitzpatrick and Tua are interesting. I feel like that offense runs better with Fitz. There's one thing Tua does that I think a lot of people notice, that he might even be more accurate on intermediate throws than people expected coming out of Alabama. He's been really impressive with that. But before last week's game, they both had taken 10 sacks this year on about what? Fitzpatrick had about 2.5 more times dropbacks than Tua did. So Fitz makes that offensive line look so much better.
I wouldn't mind seeing Zach Taylor, even though you don't have your quarterback, outcoach someone. I mean, it's, you know, Tennessee. I'd point to the Tennessee game as an example where they did a good job there. But I'm still waiting to find out who this person is. Highly anonymous to me still, which is disturbing.
I'm going to pull a Sessler here, and I'm not going to wait or care. I'm sending the Bengals off into the cornfields. And
oh, yeah.
I'll see you in 2021. They hold no interest to me, especially with Burrow gone. I don't really care about Zach Taylor, whether he could coach this team up. I don't think he will. It's just another a bummer end of the season for Cincinnati for obvious reasons. Looking at the Dolphins' remaining schedule, okay, they got to get to 10, right? Most likely. You never know, but probably. So let's give them a win, 8-4. Then they host the Chiefs. Not feeling good about that. Let's say 8-5. Then a big one, Greggy. Big one in week 15, home against the Patriots. Big for both teams. Could be a loser-goes-home match.
Yeah, the Dolphins have been a better team all year. I know they lost to the Patriots in week one. That it's a litmus test for them, but they have been the better team compared to the Patriots all year.
And then they close against Raiders, at Raiders, I should say, at Bills. So, okay, it's going to be interesting.
Tricky end, but you—that's what you want if you're the Dolphins. Is that schedule? I know, and you know, like in theory, you could try to line up cupcakes. There's not enough cupcakes to go around. So what you want is to play the teams you're exactly competing with. If you can't beat the Raiders and the Patriots, like you're clearly not a playoff team.
Shouldn't be in the dance. I agree. All right, let's move on. Knock this one out. This could be going to poor old Nick Shook. Detroit Lions at Chicago Bears. Matt Patricia, obviously no longer the man there. It is who? Daryl Bevel?
Yeah.
Daryl Bevel will be calling the plays. I read a notebook item on the Lions that with Daryl Bevel on offense, you might see more up-tempo and a change in a little bit how they do things on the offensive side of the ball, but I don't know what it means. The Bears lose every week. Two more teams, Mark Sessler, that we could really safely send to the cornfields.
Yeah, I a little bit off topic, but I thought Daryl Bevel had an interesting introductory meeting with the press where he has two daughters, and right around the time that he was named interim head coach, the two daughters are dating or two men, and the two men asked Daryl Bevel's permission to marry the daughters. Now, normally when that happens, he said yes, and then they go off and ask the girls to marry them like in due time, but not to be, you know, that happens on its own time. Daryl Bevel told all the reporters that had happened before the two men had asked his daughters. So he outed them as, you know, wannabe engaged men. I find that to be a weird thing to do as your opening statement as a coach. But maybe I'm wrong. Am I overreacting?
Well, it wasn't intentional. He was not. He didn't really realize what he had done.
I get it's not intentional, but you've got to figure out. You know,
just keep that out of your mouth in general. There's plenty of stuff to talk about in your introductory Zoom call. Let's just stay away from the whole topic.
He was unable to do that.
He said it was like a crazy weekend. I mean, who knows? Maybe Bevel will be like this crazy interim coach. You know, he'll just like reignite the Lions. Get ready. What? I don't know.
He's the new Dan Campbell?
I don't know. Mina Kimes' podcast, and she was like legitimately excited for the Bevel era. Check that out. I couldn't get there. And by the way, the Bears done yet, Dan. The Bears play the Lions this week, and so if they win this terrible game, they're 6-6, which not only is just in it, but might be tied for the last playoff spot. And then they play another dog team, the Texans, next week. They might lose that game. They have the Jaguars coming up. The Bears are going to annoy us, I feel like, and stick around longer than we want.
Okay, maybe. I think with the Mina thing, Mina was with Sessler on the Lions bandwagon back in September.
Maybe that was it.
And she's probably just, you know, staying on the bandwagon, which is noble in its own right. And she actually just helped David Chang win $1 million on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. So, like, she's got that going on. So, I don't know. I don't know about the Bears, though. Do you really think they'll be hanging around? Or do you think this is a free-fall team?
Here's what I think is that I would pick them to win this game because of their defense. And so that's just like another week they're going to be in our lives where they could legitimately be tied for the final playoff spot. And then you have the Texans. I don't know. Could they, you know, everyone remembers the Bears last year as like the worst team in human history. And they won 8 or 9 games last year too. Like they'll probably do it. And in this NFC race, they might still be playing meaningful games in week 16. And we'll have to talk about them. Isn't that annoying? Chris Wesley.
Greg, that's an unnecessary way to go with this conversation.
All right. Let's move on here. All right. Let's dig in with the rest of these games that are being played. In prime time, we'll start with Sunday Night Football, Denver Broncos at Kansas City Chiefs. Wes, do you think like people slept on a little bit? Maybe they didn't. Maybe it's just my life is crazy, just like everybody else's life is crazy right now. But Tyreek Hill had 200 yards in one quarter on Sunday. That's one of the most amazing things that we've ever seen in football.
It's easy to lose track of things in this year. And that's one of the things that maybe we've already lost track of. By the time the second quarter started, people were already moving on to something else, but it was an amazing performance. I talked about it on the Sunday Night Recap, reminded me of the time I got emasculated in coverage.
That was a tough sitch for you. So, but you moved on a little bit. It's still in your mind, though.
Brought back some bad memories watching old Carlton Davis get toasted there. But yeah, I think the Chiefs, I mean, come on. It seems like everyone else, even if Steelers go undefeated and meet the Chiefs in the playoffs, the Chiefs are going to be favored in that game. They're just that good.
That, you know what? That's a good way to put it, Wes, because, for instance, I have the Chiefs ahead of the Steelers in the power rankings, and that is the most basic way you could kind of boil it down to that. It's like one team finishes 15-1, the other one's 16-0. If they meet the line, Greg, let's go to the desert. Let's hypothetically set the line. Both teams are pretty much healthy. What
in
would you
Pittsburgh,
set the line?
In Pittsburgh?
The game will be in Pittsburgh.
3.5.
Or a bubble site in Orlando. What do you got?
3.5. For the Chiefs.
The Chiefs.
Okay. Yeah.
I was going to say closer to 3.
And you know what? I would feel great taking the Chiefs because I would just feel great taking the Chiefs against anyone, especially the Broncos. Who they've outscored 96-25, by the way, the last three times they played. 96-25.
Right.
I'm all set with the Broncos right now.
I mean, if we point to the Raiders as a team, I think it's being built to compete with Kansas City. They're not totally there, but there's a lot of promise, as we talked about. The Broncos, I thought, might be that team this year, and none of it's come together on any level on offense. Like, all the excitement about all the pieces. I love Jerry Jeudy to some degree, but, like, all the chaos, like, I don't know if Vic Fangio is the guy to take you into the golden lands if you're Denver at this point. Like, he feels like a coach.
The quarterback, the quarterback position is such a mess there. Right. Jerry Jeudy, remember that game? I think it might even have been week one, one of those Monday night games where he did some of his footwork with the ball in his hands, and we were all just like blown away by it. That guy doesn't even exist in the NFL right now. It's just like everything has gone down this vortex in Denver. They're a very frustrating team this season.
They are. I think that's well said.
Aren't you let down? I mean, I was more wrong about the Broncos than any team. And it's part of like the reason Kendall Hinton had no chance last week. I mean, he wasn't going to have a chance probably anyways, but they were dead last in DVOA offensively entering that game. And Drew Lock started most of these games, and they weren't any like better or worse with Drew Lock in or out of the lineup. And so that's where I think Broncos fans who are like so upset, like just need to have a reality check. And you know what? You usually get one when you play this Chiefs team who have just absolutely owned them in the Fangio era. And I think Fangio is gone. To me, the question is more, is John Elway the guy? Because how many coaching whiffs is he going to get?
Yeah, I think Fangio's gone. I think Locke's gone. I think you'll see Elway might go chase a Matthew Stafford type.
I mean, the ownership might be gone. The ownership is having all this problems where Bolins are fighting against each other, and there's all this. It's a problem.
All right, let's move on to and by the way, the desert has that at 14 points. So,
ouchie.
That is Al Michaels is, you know, going to be furious again. You get Al mad. To get him surly in the second half when the one thing Al cares about is ratings more than anything else.
Surprised they didn't flex out of this game, but I know it's the Chiefs.
I think it's just the Mahomes factor. Is Mahomes the MVP, by the way? Right now?
Right now he would. I have him and Rodgers, right? Neck and neck. I have him and Rodgers neck and neck personally.
You get my vote if I were allowed into the PFWA.
Wes, where would I know the QB index is on hiatus, but who would be number one on the index right now?
I might have to go with the unprecedented, put them both with the number one beside their name and just move on to number three.
Ooh, pulling a Sessler. Get on that fence.
I give the edge to Rodgers just because Mahomes has so much more to work with.
This fence thing is also ancient. Like, I don't do fence stuff anymore. I mean, I will ask the listeners to go find another deep dive on fence work. I don't work on fences anymore. Utterly absurd. It's from just like 2014. Like, utterly absurd. Because I pick games to go into overtime, please.
All right.
Just cut those last 15 seconds, Ricky. That's all we need. We don't need 2 minutes of that. That's what I want as our podcast preview promo, right?
Very
there.
Stale. Fence. Very stale.
He's off the fence, on the fence.
No
Finally,
longer.
Tuesday, football. How about that? The Dallas Cowboys at the Baltimore Ravens. You know, I can't even keep this stuff straight. How come the Ravens get the extra day, not the Steelers, when it was the Ravens that caused all the scheduling snafus around Steelers-Ravens. Greg, you're always plugged in to the schedule and Park Avenue. How come it worked out this way?
You sound like every Steelers fan right now.
I'm just defeated by this. It's just get rewarded.
If you're asking why are the Ravens Tuesday and the Steelers Monday, I have no idea. I have no clue. Both of the NFC East teams, Washington and Dallas, has a little extra rest. This is a huge game for Baltimore. We don't know who's going to be back from their COVID list, which to me feels like the most important part of this game. If Lamar Jackson is back and, you know, we know some of the other Ravens players like Matthew Judon are back, you know, I think there's a spine to this team they showed defensively that's not going away. With all the people that they're missing, you got to win this game and get some more people back for the Monday night Browns-Ravens game. Because when I looked at the rest of the season schedule, that Browns-Ravens Monday night with everything that's happened with both of these teams and their franchises, like that's one of the games I'm most excited for the rest of the year. Because that is your I know the Browns have the Titans this week, but you can lose that game. Even if they win that game, this Browns-Ravens game with the Browns having a chance to maybe knock the Ravens out of the playoffs 1 year after they had home field advantage, that is spicy. So you got to take care. You got to find a way to beat Dallas, which is not necessarily going to be that easy the way everything's going. I mean,
the dark mirror version of that is that Cleveland gets ransacked by Tennessee with all eyes. And then they lose on national television to the Ravens, which I think they've done like 9 or 10 times in 20 years. Like they've consistently put Cleveland against.
I want to find out.
I need to tap into some of your optimism on that front. I think this, like to your point about how tough they played Pittsburgh, Cowboys line, Zach Martin, when he came back in, that's when we got a little bit of Cowboys hope. And they talked about how much better the communication was on that line, that it just, you know, there were so many changes lineup changes there, that Zach Martin came in and was just sort of the dude. He's gone. Cam Irvin is gone. I'm not a big Cam Irvin guy, as Wes knows, but he was a guy for them. And they're back in that place where their line is a total mess. And if the Ravens get a bunch of these guys back, look out. I think they're going to handle Dallas. Dallas feels like a lost ship to me.
This feels like the Ravens are obviously a proud team with veterans, and it's a well-coached team, and I just think they are going to rally here in a big spot, knowing they need the win. And I think they win. It doesn't matter who's the quarterback, and I know that RG3, it's sad because everyone remembers RG3 coming into the league. What an incredible athlete he was. To see him try to be that guy on Wednesday, and his body was just like, no, man, we can't do this anymore. That was a bit of a bummer. And then Trace McSorley came in, and he got that late touchdown that did some desert damage. But other than that, they have major problems on offense without Lamar. But you imagine their backfield will get some reinforcements for this game. And as long as they don't completely implode on offense, I think that defense, which I totally agree with you on that, Greg, they played – that was a proud defense that was really, really stepped up against the Steelers and nearly, I don't want to say win the game, but kept them in that game with all those big stops. I think they're going to throttle the Cowboys, who are beat up and I think broken at this point of the year.
We might be, we're overreacting a little to last week, though. I mean, you were so excited about the Cowboys last week. They, you know, you locked them up, Dan. I'm just saying, I don't think any game is a gimme right now for this Baltimore team, as many struggles as you mentioned they're having on offense. Dallas had been trending in the right direction. They had just a terrible game. But man, this zombie Ravens team, they got to show you something. Three in a row losses.
I just want to thank RG3 because the only reason I tuned into that game was to see how his sliding has evolved. And he is so averse to sliding at this point that the one time he slid in this game was that long run up the middle, and he didn't know how to stop himself. So instead of sliding, he turned around and backwards dove onto his back on the ground. That was
his
slide.
I remember writing articles on around the league for NFL.com about RG3 sliding and what he needs to do to improve as a slider. Mark, I think you probably wrote 15 or 17 posts about his sliding as well. That was a major subplot coming out of his rookie season and even during it, I think.
Yeah, back then, like, you wouldn't cover a story once. It would be like, this person's name is taking off in terms of clicks. We're going to cover this angle, the sliding, the RG3 being asked out by Kim Kardashian at one point, I believe. I wrote an article on. I mean, it was just like everything RG3 is getting on that website.
Mm. And he was married at the time. It was like he said yes to Kim and he was married. No, that's concerning. I don't remember if that's true or not. All right. There you go. Week 13. How about that? Week 12. Who knows what it is? We'll be back on Friday. Excuse me. See? Everything's tough now. Everything's difficult to discern. We'll be back on Sunday with the flagship program where we recap every game we just previewed. Chris, a real treat here to have you in the back end of the preview program.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, good sir. And thank you, everybody. Make sure you check out our NFL Network program that airs Saturday repeatedly, including right in pre-dawn. That's, you know, they asked us, when do you want your show to air? We said Saturday morning, 6 a.m. And they complied. So that's the first airing. Check it out. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, and Ricky Hollywood behind the virtual glass. Until Sunday. We'll be right back.